happened. It fell to the floor after only a few seconds. Such histrionics. You didn't even try. You have two hands. Paint with your other one. They'd been going at each other for the past couple of weeks as the pressure ratcheted up. She shouldn't pick fights. Should let him go about his business, but she was desperate for something else to focus on. Something that would take her out of the terrible images she was painting day in and day out. Of the world turned upside down where no one cared about the child crying alone on the street or the man with one leg shivering in the cold. The works were expressionistic, imprecise, as far away from her earlier work as an illustrator as possible. She imagined the art crowd stunned into repulsion by the sight of them, ridiculing one after another. "I will not paint with my left hand unless you paint with your toes. Leave me alone!" Levon stormed off. She let him go. Levon would paint again. Once the show was over, she'd have time to cajole instead of shame him into trying once more. Right now, her work crowded out everything else. It was loud and forceful and took up all the air in the room. The day of the show, Levon and Felix spent the afternoon at the gallery, putting on the finishing touches, making sure everything was set. Clara had done a quick walkthrough the day before, but Felix asked that she stay as far from the place as possible to avoid giving anything away. He'd insisted they not hang the painting of Levon she'd done, to avoid adding fuel to the speculative fire, which was fine with her. During her short visit, Felix pulled Levon and Clara into a back room to reveal good news. A third of the paintings had already sold. The pride on Felix's face and the joy on Levon's made the past several months of agony well worth it. Felix's approach had worked beautifully. He'd shown the paintings to a select group of still wealthy collectors and the city's art critics that morning, and the mystery around the identity of Clyde had upped the ante. The evening of the opening, Clara put on her peacock dress, her one fine frock, and headed uptown. A crowd surrounded the entrance to the gallery, and she slipped in unnoticed. She thought back to her first show, at the Grand Central Art Galleries, where her illustrations had been relegated to a back office. Not this time. She'd clawed her way to the top back then. Against all odds, she would be famous once more by the end of tonight. She relished the idea as she wandered through the rooms, unremarked upon, invisible. A young new illustrator was now the hotsy-totsy Vogue cover artist. A man had supplanted her at Studebaker. Everyone could be replaced, but Clara refused to be forced down and out. Not by her father, by Mr. Lorette, nor by Oliver. Oliver. If he hadn't destroyed the siren, it would have been the highlight of the show. She'd tried to replicate it, but couldn't, and finally had given up. That painting had sprung from a particular place and time, of cool Maine sunrises and her rising awareness of her love for Levon. Levon stood in the middle of the main room, surrounded as usual by admirers, men and women. A man nudged her on the elbow, and she turned to see Mr. Bianchi. "Miss Darden, are you here to find out who this mystery artist is, like the rest of us?" He took out a handkerchief and wiped his shiny forehead. "They better do it soon, or the place will explode from anticipation." "I'm sure it'll be soon." She spied Felix in one corner, adjusting his tie and murmuring to the critic from Art in America magazine. "What do you think of the paintings?"
"They're exquisite. I'm kicking myself for having spent money on a painting just last week. If I hadn't bought that, I would pluck one of these right off. But times are tough."
Right. So tough he could only afford one painting instead of two. She tamped down her anger. Not now. He'd learn the truth soon enough.
What painting did you buy?
A Zakarian. Felix turned me on to it, a private sale, and Felix said it's one of his best.
Levon hadn't mentioned any sale.
No, he couldn't have.
Which Zakarian was it?
She knew the answer before Mr. Bianchi opened his mouth.
One of a boy standing next to his mother. It's strange and kind of eerie, but Felix assured me it would go up in value in another 10 years, that I'd just have to hold on to it.
She opened her mouth, but nothing came out. Levon had sold his best work so that her exhibit could go on. She looked around to find him, but he'd disappeared. Mr. Bianchi continued.
I've stashed it in the carriage house on the estate for now. I don't want it in my apartment or my weekend house. It's not a happy painting, you know. I'll wait until the market recovers and it rises in value before selling it to the highest bidder.
The thought of that painting sitting in a damp carriage house, abandoned and probably eventually forgotten, made her ill. How could Levon have done this? She made her excuses and turned to go outside to get some air, but it was too late. Felix was calling for everyone's attention. Levon stood a little apart from him, off to the side. The time had come. She hoped she wouldn't be sick.
I know everyone is here to learn the identity of my new discovery.
Felix's eyes twinkled with mischief.
I have quite a secret, and am very eager to share it with you.
The crowd was silent, almost worshipful. Clara hated them all. Hated them for how easily led they were, not by artistic merit, but by whatever was the latest craze. Clara was the next big thing, the fur coat on the cover of Vogue, the Art Deco door handle on a car. They would eat her up and spit her out again. Felix held up both hands.
However, I can't tell you just yet.
He waited until the crowd's groans and protestations died down.
We've been asked to do an exhibit in Chicago in 2 weeks. The works of Clyde are traveling across the country so that even more people will be able to see firsthand these astonishing and provocative paintings. Then, and only then, will we reveal the identity.
Somehow, Felix found his way to Clara through what was almost an angry mob. Levon caught up and pulled them into the back hallway, closing the door behind him.
What are you doing, Felix?
Levon demanded. Felix patted them both on the shoulder.
This will widen our reach.
He looked at Clara.
You'll not only be a New York sensation, but a national one. Trust me. 2 weeks and you'll be at the pinnacle of success. By stretching this out, we'll increase the value of the unsold works even more. We'll add in that one of Levon you did, sell out completely. You'll be rolling in it. Have enough money to ride out this depression in fine form.
Why didn't you tell us about this? Clara asked.
I didn't want to raise your hopes before I knew for sure.
They committed to us just now. We've done it, though.
He was practically levitating with excitement.
We've done it.
In the week and a half since the exhibit, Felix's predictions had come true. All of New York was talking about Clyde, and newspapers across the country had picked up on the story of the mystery artist, with experts weighing in on who the painter might be.
Did you remember to pack your good suit?
Clara yelled out from inside the taxi as Levon and the driver jammed their suitcases into the trunk of the cab. Levon slid in beside her and pulled the door shut.
Of course I packed it.
He paused, scratching his chin.
Or did I leave it hanging up on the bedroom door?
You left it. Since you'd already headed downstairs to catch a cab, I put it in my suitcase.
You're a doll.
He kissed her on the nose.
Grand Central, please.
The cab pulled out. the driver careening around the other cars as if they were in a race. She checked her watch. They had a good 40 minutes before the train to Chicago, the 20th Century Limited, would pull out. Plenty of time. She couldn't help but tease. I was tempted to toss it out the window to you. How could you forget your one good suit?
I have other things on my mind.
She couldn't tell if he was kidding her or not. Levon's name had been one of many bandied about in the press as a possibility. Better to address the situation now, rather than when they were trapped in a Pullman car with Felix. She shifted in the seat so she faced him. A lot of people think you're Clyde, Levon. Do you wish you were the artist? Have I put you in a strange position? He chuckled.
I don't mind one whit. All the better to surprise them with the truth when the artist is revealed. To be honest, it's a relief not being the artist du jour for a change. I find I'm bursting with ideas these days. Once you're established, I'll be on my way.
Once we have the money, we're paying for you to see the best doctor in town. She still regretted forcing him to pick up a paintbrush.
I have a surprise for you. Look.
He held out his left hand, palm down. Even with the bumps of the taxi, she could see he had control of the limb. Finally, she yelped and hugged him to her.
No tremors. That's wonderful.
Progress, my dear. When we return, we'll move to a bigger studio.
She shook her head. You're probably sick of me by now. We could get 2 studios if you like. The city zoomed past. She looked out the window and watched it go by rather than check his reaction.
One, I don't want to change anything.
He threw his arm around her, and she curled into him, breathing in the scent of smoke and spice. We'll buy all your books back, and more. She paused. And we'll get your painting back from Bianchi. Levon went rigid with anger. She hadn't broached the subject yet, unwilling to break the charm of happiness between them, the glimmer of hope.
How do you know about that? Felix, running at the mouth again.
No, I saw Mr. Bianchi at the opening.
She put one hand over his heart, unable to look up at him.
I know you did that to help me, and I also know how difficult it must have been. But I'll talk to Mr. Bianchi. He'll be happy to sell it back. We'll pay whatever we have to.
She took his silence for agreement and didn't press him further. The cab lurched to a stop on 42nd Street, where a red cap took their bags and led them down the ramp to the main concourse.
Track 34, leaves 6 o'clock sharp.
He pointed to the right. Enter that way. Levon gave Clara a sly smile.
Thanks. We know the station well.
He tucked a tip into the porter's hand.
I'm going to buy an Evening Post before we board, said Clara. Do you want anything from the newsstand?
Not a thing. I'll march ahead and make sure Felix hasn't had any trouble with the crates.
See you in a few.
The newsstand had an unusually long line for a Saturday. She paid for the magazine and turned to go.
Clara.
Oliver hovered just outside the newsstand, his hands in his pockets. A rough stubble covered his cheeks.
Oliver, what are you doing here?
I saw in the paper that Felix was on this train. I figured you'd be too, since you're Clyde.
She tried not to react.
Clara, I'm here to apologize.
Oliver's brightness and confidence had dropped away since they'd last seen each other, replaced with a weary heaviness that Clara knew all too well.
When I realized what you'd accomplished, how amazing this has been. I had to see you and say I was sorry. Can we talk?
She looked at her watch. 6:10. Only for a moment. He guided her to the side of the doorway, out of the way of the foot traffic.
I knew the artist was you when I saw the paintings were by Clyde.
The stubborn dog up in Maine, right? He scuffed one heel on the marble floor.
There I was telling you to quit, when it's what made you famous.
I'm not famous, not yet.
How's your lovely bride?
Violet's still in Los Angeles. It didn't work out. His mouth started to twitch.
I miss you.
A memory of their last car ride together swept over her. The two of them skidding along a main dirt road, carefree on a windy summer day, Clara whooping for him to go faster. They'd shared an easy way of traversing through the world back then that had since been decimated. Clara laughed harshly.
Really? Now, all of a sudden, you miss me?
I became too protective. Like you were my creation, not a person in your own right. I shouldn't have done that. But I did help you, right? Early on?
You were very helpful, Oliver.
He had been. As his ambitions had faltered, he'd tried to pull her closer to him, to tie her down. In return, she'd cut him open with that kiss on the beach.
I'm sorry for what happened in Maine.
I acted like a fool.
As did I.
You were right to be jealous. I didn't understand myself what was going on between me and Levon. I was confused.
I heard you're with Levon now.
True.
She didn't elaborate, not wanting to hurt him further. He frowned.
You're too much alike. Do you think he's going to be able to take your fame? We both know he's full of himself, always has been. Maybe for now it's working, but there's no way it'll continue without resentment.
She recoiled.
We're fine. You don't know the half of it. Don't forget that you're the one who destroyed my painting. Levon would never have done that. Ever.
I walked down the beach to find you. To tell you, I wanted to announce to everyone around the fire that we were engaged. I couldn't keep it a secret any longer. Only to come upon you kissing him.
It wasn't like that. Not then. There was no point in explaining. She began to walk away, but he grabbed her arm.
No, wait. I lied about the painting. The one you were working on in Maine. I never destroyed it.
The painting she'd mourned for the past year, watching it swirl by in her dreams night after night. She shot him a hard look.
Where is it?
I hid it in the attic.
I'll get it back. I want to make this up to you.
She had no idea if he was lying or telling the truth. Her watch read 6 minutes to the hour. A strange look glinted in Oliver's eyes, one she'd never seen before. If she walked away, would he deliberately destroy it just to spite her? Clara desperately wanted to have the siren back. The artwork was the touchstone to everything she'd done since. She had two options. She could catch the train and never see her painting again, or stay in New York. Find out if Oliver was telling the truth, and possibly recover the siren. If she took option number two, she could send a telegram to the Chicago train station, to be delivered to Levon and Felix upon their arrival, explaining everything and saying that she'd be arriving a day later. Of course, Levon would be fuming by then, or crazy with worry. She thought of Levon's lost painting, buried somewhere in Bianchi's carriage house. Levon had given that up voluntarily so she could have her chance. And now she had to do the same. She'd give up the siren.
You can keep it.
Do whatever you want with it. I don't care. His face fell,
We were good together. I helped you. I helped you get to where you are now.
Where I am now is late. She checked her watch. 5 minutes. A man yelled out in the middle of the concourse, and Clara looked over in time to see a woman run into his arms in front of the information booth. As they kissed, her eyes traveled up to the large clock on top. No, it couldn't be. The clock read 6 o'clock on the nose, which was when the 20th Century Limited to Chicago was due to depart. Her watch read 5:55. 5 minutes slow. She took off, as fast as her Mary Janes allowed, sprinting across the marble floor and through the entryway to track 34. The train was still there. It hadn't left yet. But she tripped on the edge of the crimson carpet that lined the platform and lost time recovering her balance. Imperceptibly at first, so that she wasn't sure if she could trust her eyes, the train began to move. She screamed for it to wait, but the roar of the engine muffled her cries. She stared after it, tears in her eyes, watching as everything she loved disappeared into the black tunnel. Chapter 21, February 1975.
Got a big date?
Doris swiveled around in her chair in the information booth and eyed Virginia up and down. Virginia tugged on her skirt, which was short and tight and had been riding up all day, and slid her clerk's blazer back on.
I must have gained some weight, Virginia said with a laugh.
She'd last worn this outfit to an anniversary dinner with Chester, hoping to light his fire, leaning over to apply makeup in the mirror by their front door so he could get a glimpse of the stockings she'd worn underneath. Real stockings with a garter belt and all. It had worked that night, at least temporarily, and she hoped it would do the same later today. But the booth had gotten intolerably warm, stuffy with the heat in the tight space, and she'd draped her blazer over the back of the chair where she sat sorting timetables. Of course, Doris couldn't let it pass. If they only knew she'd dressed this way in a valiant attempt to save their jobs, they might show a little more respect. She remembered Jackie, impeccably dressed, moving with such grace through the throng of admirers. This wasn't quite that. Virginia looked positively trashy, but she was performing her civic duty. Virginia checked her watch. Time to go.
I'm out of here. See you all tomorrow.
She hung her blazer on the back of her chair, grabbed her coat and handbag, and trotted across the concourse, taking care that her high heels didn't slip out from under her on the slick marble. A homeless man sitting on the floor beside the entrance to track 23 called out to her, holding up his palm, and she gave him a couple of quarters. She'd started carrying spare change to hand out to the men and women who made the building their home. It seemed the least she could do. Ever since her apartment fire, Virginia had seen the homeless in a new light, as folks like her who unexpectedly got tossed out on the streets. Thank goodness for Finn and Xavier's kindness. The elevator opened on the 7th floor, and she headed straight for the law offices of Penn Central. The receptionist was on her way out, but she called Dennis's extension and gave him Virginia's name. After a few minutes, Virginia heard his heavy footsteps coming down the hall. Deep breath.
Virginia?
He peered at her over a pair of reading glasses. The fragility of the metal frames and glass were all wrong for his large features, but gave him an air of vulnerability. That, and the fact that he looked like he was about to be attacked. She could almost see his mind whirling, wondering if this was a trap. If that was indeed Virginia who'd called on Thanksgiving and spoken to his wife, and if so, why was she here? The receptionist left, shutting the door behind her.
Hi, Dennis. You look well.
He swallowed.
You too, Virginia.
I figured it had been way too long, and I should stop by and say hello.
She shifted her weight onto one hip in what she hoped looked like an invitation.
Is that right?
I missed you.
His shoulders dropped an inch or two.
Right. I'm sorry. I've been swamped with the court case.
I heard the city's fighting back and figured you might need a little distraction.
She walked closer and offered up a winsome smile.
What do you think?
You want to go to the art school? Now?
She pretended to think it over.
No, it's too dusty there. But it's been a long day, and I really need to relax. Let's go to your office, and maybe we can figure something out.
My office?
Sure. Why not? You have a door, right?
She lowered her voice.
I'll be very quiet.
And that was that. He took her gently by the arm, and they walked back down to his office. She wandered over to the desk while he shut and locked the door. Placing both hands on the desktop, she leaned over and scanned the files and papers on top while giving him a nice view of her backside.
Wow, you look amazing. I wasn't sure.
He trailed off, distracted.
Do you have something to drink here?
He walked over and opened a drawer in his desk, took out a bottle of whiskey and two glasses, and poured a couple of fingers. She took hers and sashayed over to the couch, where a stack of red-welled folders were piled up. Dennis stumbled over and began to set them on the floor. She helped, flashing an inch of skin above her stocking, while eyeing the folders inside the red-welds. Penn Central Transportation Company, V. City of New York. Appeals, landmark status, memoranda, correspondence.
All Manila files. Not the yellow one he'd padded that day in the Whispering Gallery, which showed the terminal's actual expenses. Not what she was looking for. She kissed him, drawing him in, leaning back and letting his weight settle on her.
He tried to touch her breasts, but she pushed his hand away, told him to unbuckle his pants, ordering him about until they were going at it. Virginia had rarely been the initiator when it came to sex. It just wasn't what girls of her era were supposed to do. But being the one in power exhilarated her. The arm of the sofa crimped her neck, but she didn't care. The pain and the pleasure were all wrapped up together. When they finished, she shifted closer to the edge of the couch so he could lie down next to her. They both were panting, and he laughed.
This was amazing. You're amazing.
That's enough talking. Close your eyes and relax.
She ran a finger up and down his forearm until he had drifted off and the snores were regular and loud. She slid off the couch to the floor, in a way that brought to mind the Salvador Dali painting of the clock. Once there, she scanned the folders, one after another, keeping her back to Dennis in case he woke up. She probably had 10 minutes. If his past slumber was any indication.
No yellow folder.
She tried his briefcase, but it wasn't in the outside pocket or any of the interior ones.
She crawled over to the desk, staying low.
The drawer where he'd stored the liquor held more files, including a lone yellow one marked Private and Confidential. Original Terminal Balance Sheet.
Bingo.
Mata Hari had nothing on her.
What are you doing?
Dennis sat up on the couch, rubbing his face. Virginia dropped the file to the floor and lifted out the whiskey bottle.
Looking to see if you had any other booze. Whiskey isn't really my drink.
As he got to his feet, she did the same, sliding the file out of his field of vision with her foot.
What would you like instead?
He asked. How about some water? You really wore me out there. It worked. Dennis strutted out of his office like a rooster, off to the water cooler. And while he was gone, she tucked the file into her purse. A few days later, Virginia found herself seated across from Adelaide in the sunny midtown offices of the Municipal Art Society. We're thrilled to have more volunteers. Adelaide picked up a pen. What kind of work would you like to do for us? We have several options, including helping stuff envelopes for our mailings, inputting data, or assisting with outreach. Whatever I can do to help save Grand Central. All three, if necessary. You're enthusiastic. I'm not surprised after seeing your daughter's remarkable photos. She really captured it. Since I work there, I see firsthand the beauty of the place. I wish there were more people like you in this city, ready to step up. I was at the press conference. It sure feels like there's a groundswell of support. We can only hope the appellate judge in the case takes that into account. Adelaide checked her calendar. Can you start on Saturday? We're planning to hold a couple of demonstrations outside the terminal over the next few months, and it'll be a brainstorming meeting. You bet. Out in the reception area, they shook hands. Oh, no, I forgot my umbrella. Virginia held up one hand. I'll grab it and be right back. She popped back into Adelaide's office, pulled out a large unmarked envelope from her purse, and laid it on Adelaide's chair, where she couldn't miss it. Sealed inside was the yellow manila folder, proof of Penn Central's creative accounting. She could only hope that Adelaide understood the significance of the figures. Virginia plucked her umbrella from the floor and left, closing the door softly behind her. The 1st of March came in like a lamb, the sky a bright winter blue. Slightly buzzed after sharing a farewell mimosa with Xavier and Finn at Bemelman's, Virginia considered what to do next. The whole Saturday wide open in front of her. Ruby had served them, proud of her skill behind the bar. And they'd all hugged and kissed goodbye. Xavier and Finn were off to Europe in their next adventure, and Virginia was sorry to see them go. Even though Finn was due back in the summer for another long gig at the Carlisle, she'd miss her daily dose of her brother's silly wit and quiet strength. After that dismal meeting in the Oyster Bar, Chester had surprised Virginia by writing to her upstairs neighbors on his firm letterhead, requesting any and all receipts relating to the fire damage. In response, they'd dropped their demands considerably, and Virginia and Ruby had moved back into their apartment a couple of weeks ago. Virginia relished every nook and cranny, happy to have a home again, except the blank space on the living room wall where she'd hoped to hang the watercolor. Hey, Virginia. Virginia turned to see Ryan standing beside her on the sidewalk. He squinted in the bright morning light. That scarf looks grand on you. She pulled it closer around her neck, surprised by the compliment. Thanks. What way are you going? She pointed south. I thought I'd stop by the Museum of Modern Art. If you don't mind, I'll walk with you for a bit. They fell into step through the early morning crowds, mainly older folks wandering down Madison. A bike zinged past her on the sidewalk, and Ryan took her by the elbow and pulled her a little closer to him. Careful there. Thanks.
I'm glad we have some time like this. I'd been hoping to talk with you.
He shoved his hands into his coat pockets. She frowned, thinking of Ruby, who was relying on the bar income to pay for her photography classes. Is something wrong?
No.
Not at all. But something was off. She couldn't tell what, Ryan buzzed with a nervous energy and had a spring to his step that she hadn't seen before. "How's Ruby doing?" she asked. "Great. Really good. I wish her father would give her a break. Chester seems to think that she's slumming it by working in a bar." She turned to Ryan. "I don't think that, of course. I'm thrilled she's working and happy." "I understand his concern. I come from a proud line of publicans, so to me, it's about carrying on a tradition. America needs more gathering places like pubs. It offers a sense of community that otherwise we don't have, wandering about in our own little worlds, disappearing into our flats at night." "I like that. A very refreshing take. My father would have certainly agreed. Of course, there's always a group of drunks getting plastered in one corner. As long as they pay." Ryan laughed. "That's right. As long as they pay." They wandered along, chatting about the neighborhood and what the city had been like when Virginia was young. She pointed up at the skyscrapers of Rockefeller Center as they turned west. Her volunteer work at the Municipal Art Society had given her a new appreciation of the city's skyline. Those were built during the worst years of the Depression and put 40,000 people to work. They hired out-of-work artists to decorate the lobbies. Imagine all those families who had enough to eat because of this. "A first-class piece of architecture," agreed Ryan. "What do you think about this fight for Grand Central?" He shrugged. "I haven't thought much about it, to be honest." Time for the soapbox. "Grand Central has to be saved. It's an important part of old New York. I'm involved with the Municipal Art Society to do whatever I can to help." "What are you doing for them?" Probably best not to mention that she'd slept with the enemy in order to steal financial documents. Adelaide had never asked about the envelope Virginia left behind after her interview. Maybe she knew it was smart to be circumspect, or perhaps Virginia had overestimated the document's importance. In any event, the subject had never come up. "I'm handing out flyers, mailing out press releases. Jackie O's involved as well, you know." "Jackie, right? You two good friends." She batted at his arm. "You're teasing me. I like the way you light up when you talk about this. It's good to have a passion." "True." When they reached the Museum of Modern Art, Virginia stopped. "Here's my destination. Where did you say you were going?" "I didn't, exactly." He shoved his hands into his pockets. "What are you seeing?" "The Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit." She paused. He seemed a little lost, like he needed company. "Do you want to come in?" "I don't want to intrude." "Not at all." Ryan followed after her, insisting on paying for her ticket. The woman behind the counter flirted with him, but he didn't flirt back. He was a very good-looking man, Virginia noticed. His hair was white but thick and wavy, and his face was still unlined. Inside the exhibit hall, Ryan stood frozen in front of one of the paintings, an enormous jack-in-the-pulpit flower. "Oh, my," he swallowed. "It's very... No, it's not." Virginia tried not to blush and laughed when she couldn't stop. "How can you say it's not?" She parroted the review she'd read in the newspaper earlier that week. O'Keeffe dismissed the sexual interpretations of her paintings. She saw all these enormous buildings going up in New York and decided to paint her flowers as big as well. It got people's attention, startled them. "So you're saying that Rockefeller Center inspired this?" "I bet it did." Virginia continued her lecture, unable to stop herself, even though she sounded like one of the speakers from her preservation committee days. O'Keeffe rejected the notion that she was a woman artist. After all, no one calls Rembrandt a man artist. "That is a very good point." They made their way through the exhibit chronologically, pointing out the works they loved. Virginia adored a set of mannequins wearing clothes that O'Keefe had sewn herself. Loosely draped wrap dresses, paper-thin white linen shirts, and austere wool suits. Comfortable and elegant. They reached the end of the exhibit, where a few old books were splayed open in a glass case.
Virginia, I did want to ask you something today.
Was he going to ask her on a date? Was that what this was? She still hadn't been able to determine how old he was. The white hair made it difficult to ascertain. But did it matter in the end? He seemed like a nice enough boy. Ugh, boy. No doubt about it. Ryan had a boyish air to him that made her want to reach over and fix his collar, which was sticking up on one side, rather than toss him over a couch like she had with Dennis.
She shifted her weight from one foot to the other, defensive. What's that?
I'd like to date Ruby.
Not what she was expecting. She rested one hand on the display case to steady herself.
What? I know this is strange and possibly uncomfortable for you, with my being older than she is.
If he knew the least of it. She'd been worried that he was going to ask her on a date, acting like a schoolgirl, when in fact he wanted to date her daughter.
Humiliation was a possible reaction. She tried it on, breathed it in, but for some reason it didn't stick.
Ruby and Ryan. How old are you?
I'm 26. I know this hair makes me look like I'm about to retire, but I'm not. It's a family trait. Happened to my dad as well.
Let me see your driver's license. He pulled it out of his wallet and held it up for her to inspect. Indeed. Born in 49. She almost laughed out loud at the absurdity of her vain mistake, relieved by the fact that it really didn't bother her. Ryan was a good man. Her daughter was smart. They'd figure it out. She stared down at one of the books in the display case.
Huh. Are you all right?
Ryan moved closer.
I'm sorry for the way I'm handling this, but I wanted to be forthright, not hide about.
She waved a hand in his direction but didn't look up.
No, no, I appreciate it.
The label in the display case said it was an old yearbook from Georgia O'Keeffe's high school. She read the caption out loud.
A girl who would be different in habit, style, and dress. A modern lass, that Georgia.
Ryan said.
Virginia barely heard him. She stared at the name under the photo, leaning in close to make sure she was seeing it correctly.
Georgia Toto O'Keefe.
How odd. She'd assumed Toto was a nickname, but had never questioned what for.
What if the connection to an artist wasn't a coincidence? She thought back. Toto had been the one who'd mentioned the art school was haunted. What if Toto was the one going through crates? But why would he do that? Then she remembered the black and white photo of Clara Darden she'd seen in Janice Russo's office. The long neck and translucent eyes.
The two could be brother and sister easily. And Toto was the right age to have been Clara's sibling or some kind of relation. Confusion and elation ran up Virginia's spine. What if Toto was the ghost of the Grand Central School of Art?
Chapter 22. March 1975. Virginia showed up early to work on Monday, greeted the evening shift, and offered to take over for the supervisor. The early morning commuters knew where they were headed, for the most part, so she busied herself by climbing up through one of the missing glass panels in the ceiling and up onto the very top of the information booth, not caring who saw her. From there, she had easy access to the four-sided clock. Taking great care not to disturb the face of the clock, she rubbed the brass sides with cleaner until they shone, before climbing back down and stowing away her cleaning supplies. But even this didn't help alleviate her nervous exhaustion. Last night she'd hardly been able to sleep, not only because of what she was about to do, but also because Ruby had wanted to talk about Ryan into the wee hours, after the bar had closed for the night. Virginia supported her daughter's decision to date him, but entreated her to stay independent for a while longer, not to rush into anything. Sure, Ryan seemed like a lovely man, but she had her whole life ahead of her. That morning, Virginia left before Ruby woke up, eager to get to work. Terence arrived first, arching one eyebrow at her promptness. Usually no one was in before Terence. Soon after, Doris and Winston sidled through the door, arguing whether the Stepford Wives was boring or brilliant. Finally, Toto showed up, balancing two coffees, handing one to Terence. Virginia tried to stay cool, as Ruby would say, and not stare, but she couldn't help it. His hair was messy, as if he'd just rolled out of bed. She'd assumed early on that he and Terence were brothers, as they shared the same slim builds, gray hair, and height. They bickered all the time. She'd been corrected by Terence, but hadn't considered the matter further. Toto's back was to Virginia as he settled in, adjusting his timetables, lining up his pencils just so. Imperceptibly, his shoulders stiffened. He straightened up and looked about, one hand covering the O'Keefe exhibit brochure that Virginia had left there. They locked eyes. "What's this?" Toto's voice trembled, but he covered it with a cough. "I went to a fascinating exhibit this weekend." Virginia spoke louder than necessary, so her voice traveled across the booth. "I learned a lot."
"Is that so?"
"Yes. For example, I learned what Georgia O'Keeffe's middle name is."
Doris tore off a bite of her egg sandwich.
"Georgia O'Keefe? Love her."
Winston's eyes gleamed with mischief.
"She's the one that draws enormous lady parts, right?" "That's enough, everyone," said Terence.
Virginia made her way past Doris until she was right behind Toto. "Toto is her middle name," she whispered. Toto tried to ignore her, but she pressed in closer. "Right?"
"What about it?"
"We should talk." Toto stood.
"Terence, I'm going to help Virginia with some boxes."
Toto led the way to the elevator at track 23. Virginia's heart pounded as loudly as her footsteps as they walked toward the art school without speaking. Her hunch had been right. Toto pulled out a key ring, fiddled with it, and then opened the door. She'd found her ghost. Inside, Toto headed to the back storage room, the one with all the crates. He stood in the middle of it, his hands on his hips, surveying the mess of crates, some opened, some shoved to one side, the assortment of artwork pinned haphazardly on the walls. He plunked down on one of the crates and let out a harsh laugh before putting his head in his hands, overcome. Virginia perched on an old wooden chair.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. Maybe we can help each other."
"I don't need your help."
"I think you do. Who are you really, Toto?"
"You don't know?"
"You're related to Clara Darden."
Toto threw back his head and laughed. Something about the movement caused all the pieces to finally shift into place. The smooth white neck. No Adam's apple. Toto wasn't Clara Darden's brother. Virginia studied Toto with new eyes. A woman, not a man. The suit did a lot to conceal her shape, but the hands and neck should have given it away weeks ago. Her wrinkled, mottled skin masked the delicate bone structure of her face. You're Clara Darden.
I am. She raised her head, glaring. Where's my watercolor?
Virginia sidestepped the question. How did you know I had it?
I heard you in the booth on the telephone setting up an appointment. You mentioned me and Levon Zakarian. I realized that you'd found it somehow. After months of me digging through these crates, you'd breezed right in and plucked it out from under me.
How did you get a key?
From when I taught here, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Surprisingly, it still worked.
You sent me threatening letters.
Which you ignored.
I had to find out more about the painting.
You thought it would make you rich.
Venom dripped from Clara's voice. This wasn't going the way Virginia had imagined. She'd lost the upper hand. How do I know it's really yours? Levon Zakarian is the painter, according to the rest of the world. Do you have proof? Clara turned to Virginia, hate in her eyes.
One of my illustrations is on the back of the watercolor, signed and dated at the bottom. The illustration is the basis for the watercolor, which was a study for the oil painting. Follow the clues, Sherlock.
Why didn't you just sign the oil painting with your own name? She leaned back on the crate, her arms braced behind her, head cocked.
We decided to keep it anonymous at first. Me, Felix, my art dealer, and Levon. The Depression was in full force. No one was buying, especially from a woman illustrator, and we figured a big revelation would attract attention.
Everyone assumed Levon was the artist because he was on the train to the Chicago exhibit with Felix when... Virginia drifted off, unable to finish the sentence.
When it crashed.
Clara spat out the words.
A flash flood took out a bridge and the train fell into the river below.
Virginia didn't know what to say. I'm sorry. Clara nodded and pulled a tissue out from her sleeve, gently dabbing at the skin under her eyes. A habit Virginia had seen every day, but only now recognized as something a woman would do, so as not to smear her makeup. I have to ask. Why weren't you on the train as well, if you were Clyde?
I should have been on the train with them, but I missed it, because someone delayed me. Some would say it was a lucky break. I consider it a terrible tragedy.
Don't say that. You're alive, Virginia pressed on. Why didn't you claim the paintings back then when it all happened?
There was nothing left to claim. They were all destroyed.
Except the untitled one.
I didn't know about that. Not until I saw it in the auction catalog.
She eyed Virginia, sizing her up.
I'd been told it was still around, but I didn't believe the person who told me. Oliver originally said he had destroyed it.
Who's Oliver?
An old lover. A jealous one. Once I'd recovered from the shock of the crash, I reached out to him to find out the truth. By then, he'd killed himself.
She stood, her arms crossed.
There. I'm obviously the painter. Do you need more proof? Where is it? I want it back. Now.
What happened after the accident? Where did you go?
Why do you deserve to know? Do you have the watercolor or not? It's mine.
I thought I was rescuing it.
You stole it.
I swear I didn't mean to. When I discovered it, the watercolor had been collecting dust for decades.
I must have it in order to claim the siren as my own before it goes to auction.
The siren? Of course. The title fit perfectly. Virginia pictured the painting's vague figure, which swam in and out of the viewer's gaze, the wash of blues. Where did you go after the crash? Where did you disappear to?
I have to tell you a story, and then you'll tell me where it is? Is that the game you're playing?
After a moment, during which Virginia remained silent, not without great difficulty, Clara dropped her hands to her sides. Her words came out slowly at first.
After Oliver made me miss the train, I exchanged my ticket and had a telegram sent to Chicago saying I'd be there a day late. I went back to the studio Levon and I shared, livid with myself, and with Oliver. A friend came by the next morning and knocked on the door. He said there had been an accident, and he'd come around praying we hadn't taken the 20th Century Limited. Showed me a copy of the newspaper saying it had crashed, fallen into a river, many killed. No mention of Felix or Levon. A few days later, I got word that the paintings were all gone, that Levon and Felix were dead. She paused. Everything I loved was lost.
What did you do?
I wandered about, out of my mind with grief, blaming myself. They had done so much for me, taken risks and paid with their lives. I had to get out of town, get away from everything that reminded me of Levon. I put on a pair of trousers and one of Levon's old jackets. He used to talk about how he dressed his sister like a boy when they were driven out of their village back in eastern Turkey. Dressed as a man, I felt safe traveling alone. The jacket still smelled like Levon.
That's when you became Toto.
Yes. Since I'd already tried on a new identity with Clyde, what was one more? This way no one could find me and start asking questions about Levon. I could simply disappear, leave my fury behind me.
A wisp of a smile showed briefly.
I ended up teaching art back in Arizona where I grew up, eventually settling in an old mining town called Jerome.
Did you paint?
No, never again. But I stayed tuned into the art world. I get the auction catalogs from New York in the mail, subscribed to all the magazines, watched as the brilliant few of our contemporaries hit it big. I read that the Grand Central School of Art had been closed, abandoned. Last summer, I saw the listing for the siren.
Wait, just last summer? When did you come to New York?
In September.
Virginia remembered Doris calling Toto the newbie. She'd assumed it meant he'd been working there for, say, 16 years versus Doris's 17. Not 6 months. The combination of Toto's advanced age and Grand Central expertise had thrown her. Seeing your work up for auction must have been a shock.
I went to a canyon and screamed until my voice was hoarse. It was mine, but how to prove it? No one would believe me. Then I remembered the watercolor, how I'd tucked it on top of the storage cabinet and forgotten about it. I had to come back, see if it was still there. It wasn't. When I saw the crates, I figured maybe it had been put away, and began working my way through them on my lunch hour. I wasn't going to give up until I'd scoured every one.
Why did you leave it up on top of the cabinet in the first place?
That was where I stored most of my work, after the students had cleared out for the day. I didn't want the director to know I was painting for myself during class. At the time, I didn't think anything of it. The oil was painted later, away from the school. Where did you find the watercolor?
Behind the storage cabinet. One corner was sticking out. We must have knocked it from its hiding place when we...
We what?
Virginia was certain she was turning the color of rhubarb. I was up here with a man.
I see, Clara muttered under her breath. The type of woman who's only good when she's on her back.
It was from behind, actually. She couldn't believe she just said that. One corner of Clara's mouth lifted, a dint of humor. Anyway, that blue color caught my eye. Why didn't you just look behind the cabinet in the first place?
I tried. Damn thing is anchored to the wall. There's no light. No way to tell.
She threw up her hands.
For God's sake, have I proven to you that I'm the artist? That I'm Clyde or Clara Darden or whoever else you want me to be?
She had no doubt of Clara's story. But even though Virginia had discovered the painting, she'd also surrendered it. Clara took Virginia's silence for doubt.
Follow me.
They walked deeper into the art school, down the long hallway. At each room, Clara narrated a story. About her first illustration class, the students, the art exhibits. New York during the 1920s came to life through her words. Clara's eyes sometimes blazing with anger, other times wet with tears. The school truly was full of ghosts. Virginia imagined them streaming through the hallway, whispering between easels. Clara pointed to one of the bigger studios.
This is where Levon used to teach. I took his class once, on a dare.
What was Levon like?
Passionate. Sometimes bullheaded. Always engaged with whoever was in front of him. He'd suffered terribly as a child.
And Oliver?
Privileged, beautiful, and knew it. He supported me early on. Without him, I might not have made it as far as I did, but he made sure I remembered that. He thought he could live out a life of an artist through me, I think, and resented my success.
How did you get the job at the information booth? They circled back toward the entrance.
I knew someone who knew Terence.
Clara stopped in the small foyer.
How much do you want for it?
For what?
The watercolor.
No, that's not it. I don't want your money. You should have it. It's yours. Rightfully so.
What have you been doing with it? Shopping around for the highest bidder?
No. I wanted to find out more about it, about you. Over the past couple of years, I've lost so much, and the watercolor gave me hope that eventually I'd be okay. I know that sounds strange, but I loved it.
Loved?
She leaned forward.
Why past tense?
Well, that's the tricky part. I don't have it. It's with the Lorettes.
Irving Lorette?
Irving and Hazel. I was told to talk to them. They said they were going to get an expert at the MoMA to examine it.
And?
They lied. And now they won't give it back. Clara's entire body went rigid.
Bastards. What were you thinking, giving it up like that?
I have no idea how the art world works. I assumed they were doing the right thing.
You fool.
Virginia's defenses rose. It certainly didn't help matters, you sending me threatening notes. I was terrified. You tried to come after me in the school that one time, right? When I ran out the door?
I came in to try to figure out where on earth you'd found it, then realized someone else was already in here. What you heard was me trying to hide inside one of the closets.
How ridiculous. We were frightened of each other.
This isn't some zany comedy. It's not funny.
No kidding. You had some guy mug me at knife point and try to steal the watercolor. Virginia grew indignant at the memory. I could have been killed. You should know that right after that terrifying incident, I handed it over to the Lorettes. Happy to be rid of it, at least temporarily, so it's partially your fault they have it now. Why on earth did you do that?
I watched as you waited in line at the Lost and Found, then didn't follow through. I offered the guy $20 to follow you and grab the portfolio case. I didn't know he had a knife. I didn't want you to get hurt.
For a moment, the two stood off against each other, until Clara hung her head.
It's all lost. Again. Without that watercolor, Clara Darden is just a footnote to history. If that. Levon gets to be celebrated and revered. I loved him, but nothing has changed almost 50 years later.
She leaned back on the wall, all fight drained away, fighting back tears.
You ruined it all, you meddling, ignorant fool.
Chapter 23, March 1975. Clara should never have come back. She felt like a paper-thin shell of a person, an apparition sitting in this abandoned art school. Better yet, a relic, just like the dried-up paint cans and brittle brushes. All her savings had been spent on her big trip to New York. Just like last time, it had ended in failure. Clara's new life back in Arizona had been fine, rich in beauty. She'd found a town of artists on the edge of a mountain, most of whom made Indian jewelry, metal sculptures, or misshapen macrame webbings to sell to tourists. Her house had a sagging front porch and a tiny bedroom that was boiling in summer and freezing in winter. She made some friends, but never got close to anyone. Teaching art at the local school paid the bills. No one questioned her clothes or voice, asked if she was a man or a woman. She was free to be Toto, the name she came up with on the train out west. New York City, when she first returned, had thrown her off balance. The crowds made her dizzy, the filth overwhelmed. But she'd settled into a routine with the job she got from Terrence, a distant relation of one of the teachers in Arizona. Her old knowledge of the terminal returned right away, although every so often, early on, she'd answer a question incorrectly, sending the inquirer to the newsstand near Gate 37 when it had relocated decades ago. Her sole purpose had been to see if she could get that watercolor. She dreamed of it at night. Rued the day she didn't take it home with her instead of leaving it on top of the cabinet. She looked around. The sorry state of the old art school matched her own. Virginia spoke cautiously.
Where are you staying?
I found a short-term rental. Downtown.
Clara narrowed her eyes at her.
Don't tell anyone in the booth about me.
I swear I won't.
The dimwit had handed the watercolor over to the Lorettes, just like that. Mr. Lorette, who'd had it in for her since the very beginning.
I'm sorry for all the suffering you've been through, Virginia said. The train crash, losing everything.
The girl wouldn't give up. It was as if she was looking for absolution, and Clara wasn't about to give her that. It was the Depression. The whole country was suffering. Not like today, where they're moaning about gas prices or inflation. People were starving to death in the streets.
Does anyone else know that you painted the siren? Is there anyone else alive who could recognize you and stand up for you?
She was stubborn, this one. Not about to back down. No matter how cruel Clara was. Clara grudgingly respected her for it, to be honest. Same for the way she'd showed up day after day in the information booth, cleaning it up and making herself useful when she wasn't being annoying and prissy.
Not a soul.
Virginia exhaled loudly. Where was the last place you saw it, then?
In the cottage in Maine. Oliver told me later that he'd stashed it in the attic.
Virginia scrunched up her face. Who else had access to the cottage?
An actress named Violet, who Oliver eventually married.